No questions?
I have one real quick one. Syndac, the RCMT, what format is it in right now?
So right now we have Excel formats are there, and we have, simply we also created the text files are there. Those are the default formats and flags. But we also have a, we are working on an Access database version, so we also can import a few database.
You had a question, but I don't think this works.
That's fine, I'm trying to speak up.
Yeah.
Just mentioned before the end here that you were working with a vendor.
Yes.
Part of the thing I've been wondering here is, you know, I assume that this is set up so that a vendor with my information system to a website can access the table and know which testing results should be reported. So how long do you think that might actually be implemented in practical sense? That we'll have systems that might do that.
So we have the web services again part of the training. So we have engaged the vendors within 1 or 2 hours to develop the web services kind of vocabulary cover. It's not that difficult, we have examples. So we are working with the vendors. We have a we are taking a list of vendors from the JA survey, National ELR survey, we have a big list of vendors, but that's the list we are trying to focus on and go on with them. And in that way some sort of a consolidated list we can work with them. We plan on even having a webinar specifically for vendors to give them a more detailed how they can access it and get their updates and everything else too.
Super. Okay, thank you.
But I think your question is it should take under 6 months practically to make it updated. But even then, you know, the issue is how often you want it to get updated. That's something you often have to decide.
And Sunak, are you planning on pushing updates?
But you can do, we have RSS feeds out there, so they can get the notification, but it's still they have to pull the content out.
Great. How y'all doing? All right. So my name is Dan Vreeman. I'm a medical informatics researcher at Reagan Streep Institute, and I head up the development of LOINC, and that's the primary role which has brought me here, but I'm also engaged in a variety of other things, and I think at Reagan Streep, and it was nice hearing sort of everyone. I think you'll hear some similar themes in some of my perspectives on this. So LOINC, what is it? Well, logical observation identifiers, names, and codes, and obviously, as you all know, it's designed to provide identifiers for tests and measurements so that you can aggregate and pool data, as well as to distinguish things that have clinically important differences, and that's what the whole naming structure is designed for. This is our friendly mascot, so it's LOINC, like oink, not LOINC, as sometimes we hear. So our task is essentially, right, to create codes that distinguish things that need to be distinguished, so even things that might appear similar but really are different. That's what LOINC is all about, so we want to distinguish meerkats from meerkats. But, so I've sort of, as a LOINC guy walking around the conference, I've had actually a number of questions and comments and things in different sessions about, you know, the role of LOINC and so forth. And so just because I wasn't sure who all was going to be here, I thought, let's try to hammer this and try to make it as simple as possible in some context. So think of, if you can think of an observation as a question, an observation value as the answer, LOINC is designed to provide codes for the questions. And by specific design, we sort of leave the question answer to other vocabularies, particularly in these contexts, SNOMED, but in other venues you might think of ICD or other answer codes. But to just kind of put this concretely, if you're looking at a segment and a message, how does LOINC and SNOMED work together? You know, if you're talking about something that has a coded value, so lots of tests are just numbers, right? You don't need a code for them. But if you're talking about a coded element, which would be identified in the OBX5, or the OBX5, which is the result. If it's coded, you'll see the CE there in the data type. And you've got a LOINC code that identifies, you know, what is this observation? What the heck are these results? In this case, this is a LOINC code for an organism-specific culture, a Listeria culture. And you see here over in the OBX5 is the code for the actual species, and SCT means it's from SNOMED. So just to recap, sort of LOINC question, SNOMED answer, you need them both in this context to identify what is going on. So I'm going to bring together a couple things that that Sean had brought up. So registry, because it relates to why we LOINC as sort of an SDO, registry as a steward of that, view this as such an important activity. It partially is because we've also been engaged in this very production level activity for a very, very long time in a variety of ways. So we worked with Diane Dwyer, you know, back in the day, as you might say. This is actually a paper from Clem and some other Regenschief investigators and Diane talking about this problem of electronic lab reporting and the challenges of getting standardized codes, but sort of seeing that as a powerful use case or example of why structured coded data was so important. And so this paper came out in 97. The first LOINC release was in 95. So you see very quickly this was one of the strong driving use cases for why it's great to have a standardized coded results. We've been doing ELR since 98, and as Sean mentioned, we've used a locally extended version in production. This is a paper describing some of our early experiences as why it was so such a powerful way to report. But Regenschief has also been involved in actually maintaining this, what was previously known by a variety of names, this mapping table for a while. And we've actually always distributed on the LOINC website or pointed to the appropriate references because many folks coming to LOINC to learn about LOINC, to map to LOINC, are doing it because of this, this use case. But as Sean mentioned, we also have recognized this need to maintain this value set as really a distinct activity from the core standard terminology development. But there are some lessons that we can learn by bringing everyone together. So this is the paper Sean mentioned. So Regenschief, as the LOINC developer steward, joined with this effort that Sundac described and participated in it to the best that we could. And I think it's interesting maybe for, I'll just sort of comment now on a couple of things that I think why it's helpful and what we could bring to the discussion, what we can contribute. So number one was sort of LOINC knowledge, is sort of translating sort of the language of the laboratorians and what they need into the discrete elements of the LOINC code. We could also describe, you know, as questions came up, you know, what the heck is this test, you know, looking at the LOINC code, we could provide some context about where did it come from? Who was the requester? What else do we know about it that could maybe inform whether it was should it be in the list or not in the list? But also, I think importantly, is by us being in this forum, it was sort of a direct channel for feedback both to us in developing the terminology, and also, you know, to share our input on what the codes are and what they mean. But it was also, I think it was important in many ways because we learned quite a bit. So Kathy Mercer, the senior LOINC developer, and Clem McDonald, the chair of the laboratory LOINC committee, participated in many of the calls as they could. And I think, importantly, we sort of got a better sense of what the current reality was. I mean, LOINC has been, you know, adding codes and terms for a very, very, very long time. And so sometimes you sort of wonder, is this still really being done this way? Is it not? And we got a lot of that sense from participating in these discussions, what's done currently, what's not done. And then also in particular use cases, what kinds of tests are appropriate or not. So RIA or sort of the IgG versus IgM versus IgA, sorry about the little letter there. Changes in nomenclature standards, Salmonella, for example, and others sort of learning about what the current field is thinking, and some special cases. I know there were times when people would be talking about something and you say, oh, nobody ever does that test. No, nobody ever does that test. And some people would say, well, New York State has a lab, and they're actually allowed to do that test. And so, oh, yeah, okay, so it's not like a completely invalid code anymore. There were some of these special cases, and sort of having this discussion happen all in one place, I think, was a valuable thing. So I wanted to sketch out maybe a couple things, you know, sort of future directions and from our perspective, things that we could think about and might be planning to do. One of them was some modifications actually to LOINC terms. So there's a concept status field, and for a while we've just had active terms and deprecated terms or retired concepts. But recently, a year or so ago, we added two other variants. One was a trial or experimental status, which were things that were sort of being cooked and actively developed, and it was sort of a warning that this concept may change over time. But another was this sort of a soft deprecation. We label it discouraged, which is essentially like, proceed with caution. It's not necessarily invalid, but most of the time you probably don't want this term. And actually, sort of through some of this discussion, it's very likely that some of these codes will put into this discouraged status because we've gotten a better sense of current practice. But there's also a lot of knowledge generated as part of this process that we think would be helpful to distribute sort of along with or alongside LOINC. White papers, I just sort of call them white papers, or summaries about a particular area of testing that sort of lay out the current landscape and what codes are useful in what context and so forth is something that we've written some of these and included as appendices to our user's guide. And whether through links or some other mechanism, we think that this would be a helpful thing. But also, the group has put together many, many specific comments about individual tests. For example, I show sort of one example about these. And we've built a mechanism to be able to store comments about terms in a variety of ways. And one of the things we did in another project was write up a big, we generated a list of the top 2,000 most common LOINC codes based on broad clinical lab testing and wrote up a mapping guidance document about that, which included descriptions at the level of groups of tests, but also at the individual test level. And we're sort of incorporating the individual test level comments into the LOINC database and distribution. And some of the comments generated as part of this process would actually be a helpful adjunct, and maybe we sort of label them as sort of public health related comments. But we think it would be a helpful addition to the distribution, so folks have some sense of advice about whether this is the right term I should be mapping to or not. So that's a possibility. We've also thought about and talked through some general ideas about how to integrate this knowledge with the mapping program that we develop called Rama. So Rama is a tool that's downloaded a whole bunch, probably more than 12,000 users or so, that has tools for searching the LOINC database and also mapping your local tests to LOINC. I think in many ways, it is probably the primary tool people use to map their codes to LOINC. There are some other ways you can do it. But sort of integrating this RCMT knowledge into the Rama program is something we've been brainstorming about. And in particular, an attractive option might be to sort of directly interface with the FinVADS system so that it can be sort of a dynamically updated thing. Which is, you know, a simple matter of programming and money to pay the programmers. So the usual challenges. But anyway, that's sort of an idea. And I think Sundak has sort of laid this out, too. I mean, the question of maintenance, I think, is yet an open discussion. I know that the RCMT team has sort of talked about and I think has started developing a maintenance plan or strategy. But the sustainability of this effort, I think, is an important question in the work for a number of different reasons. But, you know, one, for example, this is just to illustrate, you know, LOINC doesn't stay the same all the time. Neither does Snowman, neither does a list of reportable conditions. So every 6 months, a new LOINC release comes out. And we average right now, actually, it's ticked up the last couple of times, but we average, you know, more than 2,000 new terms per release. Not all of them relate to this activity, but it's sorting out which ones do and which ones don't. That is a challenge. So, so in the work that Sean's paper described, he outlined a couple of relatively simple informatics strategies that might help this. Through knowledge about the LOINC naming structure, you could write some algorithms to pick up codes that might need to be added to the list, or using approximate string comparators to pick up some of those things as well. But so there, that's I say that only to say there are some it's worth some thinking about and brainstorming about what's the most efficient way to build and extend this great product that is an updated RCMT, and who should contribute, who should steward, but also what techniques could we use based on what we know is the structure of the underlying terminologies and the expert opinion about whether things should be in or out of that set. But one of the other outcomes or things that I think is a real benefit was as a standards development organization, we've now been introduced to a whole community of experts who are expert on sort of this topic, and that is a benefit to us because we get input from lots of different sources, whether international folks or within the U.S., and sometimes questions sort of come up in our own mind about really crazy, wild stuff, and it's nice to have sort of the phone-a-friend line, if you will, to help tease that out. And I think being introduced to this community was another way to sort of extend that expert input process. So that's essentially what I had, and I think we'll probably open it for questions, but also we can transition now to sort of a general discussion about any of the things that folks heard today.
So the microphone's not working, battery's dead. So questions folks have, I'll make perfect sense, and we're ready to get on board and contribute our resources towards maintaining the core condition mapping table. Some of the things that Dan said at the end I think is very important. What we've got now, we have an updated RCMT right now, but the issue is LOINC changes, new codes are added, codes are deprecated, the nationally notifiable disease table, so what conditions do we care about reporting, that evolves over time. That goes up and down. So we're dealing with a moving target over time. And if we don't have some way of tracking that, an efficient and effective way of tracking that, we're in trouble. A couple things Dan said sound interesting. So Realm of this mapping tool that folks use to map their codes, if they have a local code, they map it into LOINC. If they could know at the time they map it to LOINC, oh, this is reportable. I should make sure that my lab is aware of this, and we should make sure that we have the appropriate workflows in place. So that's intriguing. I hadn't thought about just a direct, you know, web services connection, and I'd be curious what folks in the audience think about that. But there are other, as new codes are added, as new conditions either come or go, there needs to be some way of looking through all of the possible combinations. So if we've got, what, is it 50 or 60,000 LOINC codes now?
65,000.
Yeah, 65,000. So nobody would be foolish enough to do this, but if you took 65,000 LOINC codes times 110 notifiable conditions, you have millions of combinations, right, to look through. Now, that's foolish to do that. We actually did that in our paper using computers to try to find things. But so the point is we need to have some smart ways of searching for the new reportable codes. We need to have a way of effectively helping people recognize when things are reportable. And I think the biggest challenge is nobody really likes to pay for public health, but this is a important use case, and without the reportable condition mapping table, you can't do automated electronic laboratory reporting. You just can't. It's not possible. And so I'll qualify that. If you don't use the RCMT, you're going to make up your own table, right? And I could be wrong, but I don't see any reason why somebody would want to create their own RCMT, given all the work that's been going on. So it's a key function for a key public health process. And so if folks in the room have ideas about sustainability processes, we know that the CDC is loaded with cash right now, and we're sure that they're willing to contribute some as well. But what some ideas? Go ahead.
It's not an idea, it's a question. Because I think with these kinds of coding updates, if there's one way to look at the maintenance question from the perspective of how frequently the underlying vocabulary is updated. But there's also the question of how frequently can the receiving vendor systems accept those updates.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere in there is the overlay of what does the science community really need? So in terms of how can they sort through the kinds of changes that are being made to determine those which absolutely need to be included? We suddenly got avian flu we didn't have before. Versus here's yet another test that's been added because somebody got past the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
And so with CMS and the quality measures, the CMS Joint Commission manual, what we found was that the underlying specifications for the measures, which included the ICD-9-CM codes and a variety of other HCPCS, we could do that every 6 months. But the announcement, the changes, by the time the change actually filtered through to actual implementation, was close to a year, if not longer.
Mm-hmm.
And the question for labs is really whether that's an acceptable timeline, because built into that timeline was the idea that you had to provide enough lead time for the vendors to be able to incorporate it into their systems, for them to be able to test it adequately, and then push the implementation out to the hospitals. If you looked at it not from the perspective of how often mm-hmm. does LOINC get updated, or for that matter SNOMED, but from the perspective of what the hospital community is seeing, or what the lab community is doing, what makes sense as an update cycle?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you need it as frequently as SNOMED and LOINC can provide it? Is it slower, faster?
I don't think there's a single answer to that. I mean, I'll take a shot at this one. You know, use H1N1 as an example. That happens. People want to know, what should I be sending, right? So there's an immediate urgency. For other things, it may be an updated test, or this is where I think the conversation gets very complicated, because folks talk about this notion of a right LOINC code and one that might not be quite right. There's some fit bucket LOINC codes out there for electronic laboratory reporting. And often what we'll do is we will point a result to a bit bucket. So there's microorganism identified, 11475-1. I know it because we have so many bugs pointing to that LOINC code right now. So if there's not a sense of urgency about specificity and you just want to continue driving your electronic laboratory reporting system, maybe you point it, maybe there's a temporary pointer to this LOINC code until you get something more specific. So I think there's all sorts of ways to build, you know, capacitance into your system. But it strikes me that we need some sort of, you know, if in this process there needs to be a alert, new LOINC code. This thing is happening right now, and this is the code that you need to use. But again, that will be the exception, not the rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had talked about, since LOINC, there's sort of a natural frequency of the LOINC releases. There's a natural frequency of the yearly NNDS updates. So there is some periodicity to the codes being updated. And then, you know, the point about the vendors is well taken. I don't know what a vendor update cycle looks like. And the reality is, maybe this isn't as big a problem regarding the vendors as we think it might be, because the reality is, the RCMT is a starting point, not an ending point, right? Because everybody has different rules and different reportables. We're starting to see drug-resistant Klebsiella in Indianapolis, and our public health folks have said, please start reporting this. So we've had to update our local RCMT, and so will other parts around the country as your situation changes. So this is a starting point, not an ending point. And so I think that's another...
Yeah, I'm sorry. Coming from left field late into the conversation, but I think it's intriguing, and it seems to me, being from state public health, that the conversation is the linkage needs to be strengthened between you and the laboratories, and you start with your best child in Indiana, where you guys have been doing this for a long time, and maybe try to pilot it with some real concrete examples like you just said, and try to work on a pilot. But I think the vision has to. I don't know how many other folks are in. Anybody from the laboratory in here? Or the representative vendor that works in the lab? Maybe not. But I think because we get it downstream, we're constantly going to be using a decoder ring of a decoder ring of a decoder ring, and it's a lot of wasted resources.
The strength, the linkage needs to be strengthened at where they're coding it and they're deriving, getting the tests and setting some goals, really working on money and ideas around funding and ideas around trying to strengthen that in real time. The periodicity of how all that works is really complicated and highly variable, but I think offhand, J.A. Magnuson can tell me, but I don't think we get too many blink codes coming through the pipes. We have to decode all the time and recode, and it's horrible. So find incentive to get the laboratories, vendors, and labs together, get them on board, and come up with a nice fancy interface and Uber system to where they can go and get what we need. Make their lives easier.
Good comments. Thank you. Other comments or questions? If I have one question for Dan. On your slides, I was curious, what do the Independent Grocers Association of America have to do with all this stuff? Is it capital I, capital G?
That's what I was commenting about. It was last minute additions. You always get caught, right?
Yeah, that's right.
We have another question. I mean, we have seen your presentation as so you're taking a pragmatic approach in evidence free, looking at the data, building your system, and also you've been seeing for the last several years several groups have been trying to create the knowledge base, all in ontology. But as she has mentioned, in Minnesota, the common language is spreadsheet for most of us.
So I was
trying to see, can you see how long you think these knowledge base and other things are going to be really being effective in public health, even if you have a good perfect one?
I want to make sure I understand your question. Are you asking, should we really look beyond just an Excel spreadsheet for dissemination? Is that your question?
That's part of it, but also should we push through this knowledge base efforts and other things to downstream and exposing them is even more hard, actually.
I would work on getting the data model right first, and if that's a data model encoded in an Excel spreadsheet, that's fine. What I mean by getting the data model right is I think this is more than LOINC code, condition, SNOMED code, Utah, I'm blanking on her name right now, Catherine Stays, is doing a lot of work on some of the metadata reporting requirements that may be helpful to add into this. Then there's just simply the whole update process of when was this added, when was it updated, those sorts of things. So I think there needs to be some attention to the workflow if we need to talk to some partners and understand, okay, do you benefit from the RCMT? Yes, no. Yes, great. You're somebody I want to talk to. How would you like to receive this? How would you imagine it being easily, effectively, efficiently incorporated into your system? What fields, you need to understand the workflows of your partners who are going to be consuming that and then build in the additional metadata that would be needed to help support them. Now, you're not going to satisfy everybody probably, but you can at least get 80-90% of the way there. And so if that's an Excel spreadsheet to begin with, great. Over time, can we go to a web service, I click, or I get the RSS feed every 6 months, I see the signal, I download it, automatically updated. I think that's a bit of a pipe dream. I don't think it'll be automatic. I think it'll be a download, and then you'll look for what's changed. You're going to have a laboratorian, informatician expert on, public health expert on that end, who goes through and says, okay, here's the changes. Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that. I agree with that. And maybe there's even some feedback on how people consume this that goes back to you, and you can say, oh, well, nobody's using this code. Maybe we got that wrong. Those are the sorts of things. I think we need to really think through that workflow of how the dissemination is going to work. And I don't know if LOINC, I'm sure LOINC, the LOINC folks have some experience in dissemination. Maybe the SNOMED folks do as well on how this sort of broad dissemination can work. But yeah, I agree, let's start with an Excel spreadsheet and get the fields right first. Yeah. Other comments or questions?
Yeah. That's where that data is needed, so that the data being sent is already clean air, as clean as it can be. So you talk about getting the vendors engaged, we need to talk more about that. You know, from a what's practical or crawl, walk, run, what we talked about in the past, where do you see that happening today, next month, you know, 12 months from now? Do you think it's more of a public health tool or more of a lab, you know, a lab vendor tool?
Sure.
And where should we drive that?
Syndac or anybody want to take that?
In other words, I think your question is the vendor side or the user side too, actually, you know, it's
right.
A different way.
Yeah.
I'll let you answer. You have experience in this, I mean, so.
I mean, I should say what I was hoping in my story is that I can give this to the people that are going to send this data to tell them, here's where you go and look and find the matches. I mean, So I can help them to find the right stuff to pull out of their system.
So
when I get it, it's nicer.
Right. So from a hospital lab perspective, this focus that I'm on, it's either each of the hospital labs in Minnesota or the vendors
that they are
managing data within that lab, which it just gets your group of constituents smaller, more efficient, and that's that aggregation point.
What I heard earlier from what you said, though, was actually that it's really both, because on the receiving side, what you want to do is you get a LOINC code and a result. You want to know which program should I send this to? And so they actually sort of need the same thing to sort of parse it off to send it to the right group, correct?
Yeah, I think it absolutely is both, because, you know, on the sending side, there's always there's no free lunch in this space. So the reportable condition mapping table helps with business rules and decisions. It helps to know which tests are associated with which condition, but you're still starting with a local code, and you still have to map that local code to LOINC. And whether that's done by the vendors at their installations, whether it's done by public health when they receive local codes, whether it's done by health information exchanges like we do. So our hospitals have no idea what an RCMT is in our system because we do all the mapping for them. But on the other end, they're absolutely, public health needs to be able to decipher and understand what this is. So they absolutely need the decoding system. The RCMT, going one way, is an encoding system. On the receiving end, it's a decoding system. So you actually need it in both places.
But that's the standard that allows both of those endpoints to communicate.
Yeah.
Appropriately.
Yeah.
Why don't they use the RCMT?
Who's they?
The hospitals.
Because the hospitals have paid their vendor for Multim or Cerner's proprietary coding system, and Cerner today doesn't de facto have a reportable condition mapping table in their system. Now, maybe in the future we can convince vendors to use this, but you know, it all comes down to this mapping problem, right? So Cerner years ago, Allscripts years ago, paid Multim for their vocabulary. They needed a vocabulary, they bought one. It wasn't LOINC, and it certainly didn't map anything to notifiable conditions. So they've invested a lot of money in this, and if one of their customers happens to say, hey, could you map to this, in the absence of government incentives to pay somebody to do that, why would anybody want to do that? I think that LOINC, Clem, and Dan, and others have been talking to a lot of lab vendors for a long time. About getting LOINC.
As soon as LOINC started.
But again, fundamentally is, and Dan probably has a lot more to say about this, but fundamentally, this is about the hard worker saying, okay, I've invested lots of dollars in my proprietary coding system, and now I've got to do this mapping, and it takes real human time to do that. I think fundamentally that's the big issue. And mapping is really the elephant in the room, the unspoken, the greatest barrier to full semantic interoperability across this country is mapping. Because it's a lot of work up front, and it's a lot of work all the way along because things change. So.
Yeah.
Fair to say that what the standards committee did last week for stage 2 and stage 3 might well put us in a position to be able to provide the incentive or the punishment if you don't actually make those loops going forward.
Right.
You know, we're left out of stage 1.
Well,
so
I want to be sure. So just a couple days ago, the HIT Standards Committee for Quality Reporting squeezed it down to LOINC, SNOMED, and RX Norm for Quality Reporting. That's it. So we're starting to see some tightening of the standards. But was that what you were referring to?
Yeah.
Recommendation for quality reporting, not electronic laboratory reporting at this point. But but it's an interesting.
So we have the advantage of meaningfully. I mean, vendors had to do engineering work to now allow for, if they want to be meaningfully certified, they have to allow for a LOINC book. They need that segment before there was, you said, why would I do that?
Yeah.
Invested in everyone.
So
there's getting vendors to change, you know, from a perspective, which is not trivial, but over the course of the last 10 years, things have changed.
Right.
There's hope.
So, I mean, to add another angle to, I think, what you said, I think the setting the direction of things is obviously helpful in sort of saying, you know, putting your stake in the ground and saying, you know, we've got these terminologies, these are it, you know, we're gonna do this, is very, very helpful. In this particular use case, though, it's sort of a matter of, do the incentives line up with where the work is and who's going to do the work, right? And so what I've been trying to say and what others have said earlier was, you know, fundamentally, this takes laboratorians. It's not an IT problem. It's not actually a vendor problem because they have no knowledge of what actually this test is. And even if you looked at the name, you know, there's no specimen listed or there's no this, that. So determining what the appropriate LOINC code is requires having investment resources of time from the laboratory side. Or, you know, in the case where it's the public health receiver is actually doing it, you know, so it's a matter of where does the incentive flow to the people that are actually expending the time to do it. That's, I think, the challenge.
I've got another question. Where do you, we talk about vendors, and most of the time I hear that,
the labs. LIS or something, yeah.
Where do the equipment manufacturers play a role here? If their equipment is designed to run XYZ.
Yeah.
Think about the core and the source. Equipment being manufactured, should the LOINC code be associated with every new piece of equipment?
Yes. So to everyone who's listened since 1995, that's sort of been our goal, LOINC's goal. We've sort of said, we would love for coming directly out of the instrument to be a LOINC coder. And there are some challenges like, tolerance tests, so maybe it's a few LOINC codes that you choose from depending on what actually happened when you did it. And that has largely been a completely stalled effort despite, our best intentions. But recently we have had some promising glimmers. So there's an industry consortium, and I'm going to get the acronym wrong, but of some of the big manufacturers, Roche and others, have gotten together and actually sort of formed a little club, and they paid money to get into this club. And what they have done is adopted, the first step was adopting a direction to actually use HL7 out of the instrument, as opposed to most of them today were using the old ASTM messaging standard to send out of the instrument, and that had a single code field. So it was one and only one. So getting HL7 and two codes was the first step, but then they have assented to mapping their internal codes to LOINC. What we heard them say, we actually had a representative, Rob Bush, who I think is chair of this group, presented at the LOINC committee meeting in June. And what he said was they assented to mapping their codes to LOINC. They couldn't guarantee that they would like publish them in their package inserts or in their materials because of marketing costs and this, that, and the other thing. But that they would actually try to do this work. So I'm seeing, sort of a glimmer of hope in that space, but I think you're right. The furthest you can push this upstream, the better for everyone downstream in terms of, getting the mapping at the source. So
keep our fingers crossed. Other comments or questions? Well, I think it's been a good dialogue. I think there's great opportunity here. I think we have a journey before us. Why don't we thank our presenters one last time?